So I'm Domenico Grasso. I'm the provost at the University of Delaware. And to John Orr's point, I am an engineer. And I tell people that I'm an engineer when I tell them that I am the provost as well. We've talked about many things here over the last 2 days. We've conflated a lot of different topics. We've talked about the liberal arts, the humanities. We've talked about contextualization and experiential learning. We've talked about preparing for profession, preparing for citizenship, and preparing for life. And although I have comments on all of those, I am not going to do that. I'm going to stick to the script and talk about silos. But before I talk about silos, as you know, we want to be sensitive to everybody's perspective. And there is actually an International Silo Association. And their motto is that nothing works like a silo. So I just thought I'd share that with you and let you know that there are reasons to have silos. And Brian talked about silos earlier, but that's tongue-in-cheek. But the flip side of that is that when we were talking about silos earlier, whether it's culture or disciplines, I think that we have to respect those. And when we talk about transcending those, we are not talking about demolishing those. We have to respect those and the content of those silos or those disciplines or those cultures and try to work together with those. It's not to say that in any way that those do not have value, and they certainly do along many different lines. So change in the academy is a very difficult process. We talk about change over geological scale, but I think that that is very fast compared to change in the academy. As a matter of fact, one of my favorite administrators in higher education was Clark Kerr from the University of California. He's had a lot of great comments that have been quoted over and over again. But one of the things that he observed was that if we take the Reformation about 1530 as a starting point, 66 institutions have survived in virtually the same form, in recognizable form. The Catholic Church, the Lutheran Church, of course, because it was the Reformation, the parliaments of Iceland and the Isle of Man, and 62 universities. Okay, so since the 1500s, we have 62 universities that have survived in recognizable form. This does mean that they don't change at a very rapid rate. So we have to really consider this when we're considering cultural change. And someone yesterday said that culture eats strategy for lunch or for breakfast or any other meal of the day. But that is absolutely true. And if we're going to see change happen, we have to think about it in terms of cultural terms. So just to follow up on a lot of things that Judd said, which I agree with everything he said, and I'm just going to reinforce some of the things, is that in addition to everything that we've been talking about here, you need a clear and compelling narrative. And I would say that that is something that we're struggling with over the last 2 days here because we've gone off in different directions. We have to have a clear and compelling narrative. You need a champion. In addition to that champion, you need a critical mass. So you can't have one person who's a champion going off and doing it on his or her own. You need a following that is going to create a critical mass. So you need a narrative, you need a champion, and you need a critical mass. It cannot be seen as threatening the status quo, because as soon as you threaten the status quo, you're going to get pushback. So if you're going to stand something like this up, it has to be done in essentially a parallel format. You can't stand it up and threaten the status quo. You can't go in there and say, we've been doing engineering all wrong for the last several hundred years, and we're going to fix it, right? So we can't do it that way. It has to be transparent and inclusive. So no matter what you're doing, you have to let people know what's happening, and you have to let as many people as want to touch the process and get their input so that they feel that they're included by that process. As I said, I think it's a wise thing to do to set this up in a pilot or experimental fashion so that people don't feel threatened. It can be sunsetted if it doesn't work out, and you're just testing the waters. It's great if there is seed funding that's available, and that usually comes from a dean or a provost or a president's fund, or it could even be at a departmental level. It can also, if we're trying to transcend silos, one of the things that is a great way of doing this, especially if you're looking at it from a programmatic perspective, is not starting with the programmatic perspective. Starting as a transdisciplinary research initiative. That is very non-threatening to individuals. So you can do it in the context of something like an Institute for Advanced Studies and try to bring in as many folks together as possible under this and then let it evolve into curricular reform, but not starting it off as curricular reform, looking at it more of as an intellectual exercise. And the other aspect, in addition to not threatening the status quo, is you must respect the past. I think you have to be able to understand the institutional saga that took you to the point where you are, and you're looking at this as the next step in that saga, not a replacement or a remediation of the past. Two mechanisms that we have that are very helpful in doing this are strategic planning, of course, and APRs, academic program reviews. These are opportunities to re-envision the future, and it's a great way to get a lot of people involved in it and think about the future. So now I'd just like to give you a very quick example, because this is all theoretical, of what we're doing at the University of Delaware. We're engaging in a strategic plan that we've been engaged in over the last year or so. The plan is called Delaware Will Shine because it's taken from our fight song with a daring spirit bold, Delaware will shine. So as many of you know, these types of strategic plans are done every so often, and appropriately so, because in the words of that great American philosopher, and I just want to show my breadth of knowledge here, that great American philosopher, Yogi Berra, he said, the future ain't what it used to be. So things change, right? And the strategic plan that was initiated by our president, Pat Harker, who came from Wharton 7 years ago, it was great when he came, but things have changed over the last 7 years. So we want to re-envision it. This plan, though, that we're doing now is different, because we want this plan not to be sunsetted. We want it to be an evergreen plan that continues to be revisited over time. We have we've broken it down into three major subgroups. One is called Sustaining and Accelerating the Advance, because that is about respecting the past and understanding where we've come from. So it's looking at the past strategic plan and how we're going to propagate that forward. One of the other two sections is Grand Challenges, Great Debates, and Big Ideas. And I want to just make a comment here, because we've talked about the Grand Challenges. And a lot of people buy into the Grand Challenges, especially in engineering, but we have not talked about how engineers engage in the Great Debates that define our times. And this is equally important, and this is part of the general education citizenship preparation that universities are supposed to be offering to well-educated students. And this is something that engineers have a lot to offer in, but we haven't talked about that. And then the final section is called New Models for the American Research University. And this is tearing everything apart. We've asked them to look tabula rasa at our curriculum, our organizational structure, at everything. We've engaged a various number of committees, over 100 people on committees. They've engaged over thousands of people in stakeholder sessions. Everybody feels included in this. It's going to come to conclusion in 2 months, I hope. And they've already asked for one extension, as good faculty members and students do. And I hope that we're going to see a very exciting product at the end of this. And these are going to have, they're going to have mechanisms to accommodate the things that we're talking about here. So, as I said before, if this is done well, it will hopefully be our last strategic plan. We want it to be inspirational, aspirational, attainable, and sustainable, which are all the ables that I can think of. And I just want to make one last comment here before I get off stage, and that is, I think that Clyde Bryan's comment yesterday about using public health as a metaphor for this initiative is a great way to think about where we might be going. And I think that that deserves a lot of discussion here and maybe after this meeting. I think it was a great idea. So finally, brevity is the soul of wit, and I'm done.